Imagination can cause an individual to expand, exaggerate, intensify all types of negative attitudes and conditions. If imagination produces circumstantial evidence, the individual should sit down very quietly, think it through, and find ways, if possible, to disprove the rumors rather than to justify them by imagination. Sometimes the rumors may be true. Under such conditions, the only answer is to face the truth. Most of neurosis is a result of not facing into problems as they arise. In one way or another, we eat them ourselves and develop a psychic indigestion as a result. To meet this type of thing, therefore, before it gets large, nip it in the bud. Go after it and try to solve it before deep hurts become inevitable. Honesty also plays a large part in this psychic problem. How far is honesty honest? To what degree can honesty be applied to situations? I think if honesty is applied with kindness, it can be applied to nearly any situation. It is where honesty is involved in bitterness and reproach before the facts come in, then it is no virtue. We can honestly say that we do not like something, but we must also honestly find out whether the circumstances are what we think they are. Honesty in general, however, shortens a tragedy of any kind, making it more obvious, leaving less tendency for years of self-reproach, because self-reproach very often is the result of swallowing grievances and not allowing them to have proper ventilation in common action. Most people interested in the better things of life, the higher ideals and principles which we hold very dear, would like to overcome negative attitudes of a destructive nature. But in order to overcome these attitudes, religion, mysticism, idealism, higher philosophical thought, ethics, morality, and culture, all of these demand their right to have a part in our daily activity. Too many people have gone to religion because of despondency. They have nothing left to live for, they can't get along in society, and they are unadjusted or maladjusted. Therefore, they turn to religion for consolation. This is basically not a good pattern. We should turn to religion for faith and hope and strength, and not to nurse wounds. In daily practice, therefore, our problems of making new mistakes will result when we have a religion and do not follow it. If we believe in the law of karma, we know there are things we should not do. But I know more people who believe in karma who are making new karma every day that is no good than you can possibly count. They believe that they're going to have to pay for their mistakes or for their selfishness or for their arrogance or for their cruelty. But this does not reduce the tendency to have these characteristics. If a person looking back over a long life finds that for many years they have made similar mistakes and suffered accordingly, that they resent always the consequences of action, but not the action itself, then a little self-thoughtfulness is indicated. But most people don't object to doing wrong. They object to getting caught. And when they get caught, it all seems very unfair. And also, they may develop an intense dislike for the person who catches them. It is not themselves they blame, but the results or consequences returning again to the person who causes them. This being so, we have to begin to think in terms of an idealism that causes us to change conduct. Conduct is a very difficult thing to approach because it is so internal. We can see what's the matter with everyone else, but in ourselves, our conduct seems so reasonable. It seems so consistent. It seems as though it's always telling us to do exactly what we really wanted to do. And as a result of that, it is hard to discipline it. All life grows on discipline. Memory must be disciplined just as much as any other part of man's composite constitution. Memory must be taught what to remember, and it must always be taught to investigate a situation or a memory and find what is good in it. It may be that there is no good in it as far that we can justify our own action, but there is good in it that perhaps it has helped us to become better people and bring happiness or security to many lives as the result of one mistake that we made. But the disciplining of the mind does not result easily from merely not using the mind. We cannot simply say to ourselves, I will forget this. It doesn't work that way. Our friends can all tell us to forget it, but they never forgot anything either. So in the face of this general failure, we must accept that the mind has a reason for being with us. The mind was given to us that we might be historians of our own conduct. The mind has been given to us so that we can reflect upon the consequences of action. And also, it has been given to us in order that we can plan to improve the total composite of our natures. The Pythagorean discipline brought in a very important phase, namely that it is the duty of the mind to plan the day before we live it. Instead of waiting for all kinds of things to happen and then trying to intellectualize them, we should start with the mind's giving us a proper program. At the present time, in national and international affairs, we're bogged down for lack of straight thinking. We are unable to face an emergency until it happens, and then we do not know what to do about it. And the mind wanders around in a sea of opinions and notions. A life must be planned as a national destiny must be planned. And the Pythagoreans advise that each morning the individual should take 5 or 10 minutes and plan his day. He should decide exactly how he is going to live that day. He is going to think about the unfinished business which must come into today from yesterday. He's going to decide what to do before something hits him in the face. He is going to think in terms of priorities. What is the most important thing he must do this day, today? What are the responsibilities that must be met this day? And what will be the penalties by procrastination or by failure to make a clear decision? The mind must set up the day. If it does this, and we follow its instructions, we will find that we save energy, save time, and preserve a certain mental equilibrium. Nothing happens that must be reacted to desperately. And desperation is probably one of the greatest causes of tragedy in the world. Planning the day gives us the wisdom, gives us a program to follow. It gives us a certain number of things to do that need doing, and the order of their priorities. It gives us also the ability to move from one situation to another without confusion. We do not have to hesitate, wonder, doubt whether we are or should do a certain thing. The next point that perhaps the Pythagoreans gave us that is vital is the retrospective exercising. What do we remember at the end of the day? What did we do with the day? Are we proud of it? Has it been a day that we can accept with a good memory? Or is it something we wish we could forget even before the night comes on? Is it a day of harassments? And if so, what were they and why were they? Do they represent really things that happened on the outside or only reactions to them? Was your bad day the result of the fact that you got up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning? Was it a matter of being irritated all day long? Was that irritation due to a family dispute or too heavy a breakfast? What was the cause of the fact that you went through a bad day? In most instances, if you sit down carefully and think of it, you are the cause. It's not what happened to you, it's what you did about it that made a bad day. So retrospection helps us to recognize the relationships between ourselves and the various circumstances that we face during the day. It may show us, for instance, to be rather too selfish or too self-centered. It may show that we are too extravagant, we've gone into debt. It may show that we also were too harsh, too critical, too unpleasant in our relationships with those around us. In other words, it was a bad day because of the acidity in our own psychic integration. If we can face this, analyze it, study it, think about it, we will come much more quickly to the full understanding of what we have to do in order to correct these situations. We get out of our minds forever that the world is terrible. It is difficult. It is tragic. But each individual has the power within himself to understand the things that are happening and to discover what the wise have known since the beginning of time, that in this universal plan, all things ultimately work together for good. Good is something that has to be earned, and we are too interested in being happy to consider the importance of being virtuous. Also, the retrospective exercise reveals what may be called the stream of conduct. It tells us the natural reactions which we seem to have. It shows us the lack of self-discipline. It shows us the faults that are most likely to give us future trouble. And, of course, also the brittleness by which we create animosities and antagonisms. So to think it through is to get a picture of ourselves. And if the picture isn't what we like, then we have the privilege of doing something about it. If we do not do something about it, when one of these days in the future, we're going to have a bad memory. We're going to have something we regret. We will regret as long as our personal conduct is unethical. We will regret as long as we do not obey the primary doctrine of religion, love one another. We are going to regret as long as we cannot forgive. And while we cannot forget, we can internally forgive the circumstances that appear to be unjust or unreasonable. We live in a world in which nothing works better than the Sermon on the Mount, but it is a very hard doctrine to follow. But without some guidance of this kind, we are never going to get over the problem of bad memories and things that hurt us and remind us of past faults and failings. Among the tragedies of life, probably there is no group of tragedies that are more intense in human relationships, and those are domestic. The average person, setting up a home, is irresponsible because they do it at a time in life when they have little or no practical experience. They have not the judgment, they have not the vision, they have not the insight. They are moved very largely by the natural processes of nature by which the establishment and perpetuation of the species becomes of the greatest importance. But young people starting out and trying to form homes do so from an almost complete lack of experience. They depend almost entirely upon the background of their own family lives. They are influenced only by the examples of their elders. Now we have a new group of disillusioned that constitute a kind of sophisticated peer group in which young people getting together discuss their own faults, failings, emergencies, and misfortunes. But altogether, the establishment of a domestic pattern is essential to the success of human life. Where it is neglected or abused, there is always trouble. Now, when confronted with this type of thing, mistakes are almost inevitable. Very often, first marriages fail simply through lack of understanding and insight. No one really wanted to be wrong, but no one knew how to be right. Under such conditions, the establishment of family depends upon certain basic characteristics of the human being. Normal, natural, proper human beings are very easy to work with as long as they are not conditioned and adversely dominated by circumstances. The average young person building a home has to realize that the primary virtue, which we mostly think of in terms of love, is that love is unselfish. Love that is gratification of self-interest is not love. And if a person really loves, they then think of the other person first. But too many human beings are primarily in love with themselves and never get over it. So affection, where it is constantly dominated by the gratification of personal desires, nearly always falls apart. And when this happens, it's sometimes a serious tragedy. Somebody is hurt. Someone is seriously unhappy. How to solve this problem has become a social issue of great moment everywhere. But the truth of the matter is very simple, namely that selfishness is always penalized. Selfishness is the exploitation of other people. Selfishness is the pushing of oneself forward at the expense of their environment or their family associations. Self-interest is probably the greatest single fault of humanity today. And brought up in it, raised by it, surrounded by it, with all the friends and relatives suffering from the same elements, it is very hard for young people to start out. I know a number of cases in which an early broken home became a basis of an entire lifetime of self-reproach. Very often the self-reproach is not the correct answer. They have reproached themselves not for the real cause, but for some small emergency that arose. For instance, a violent argument was blamed for a separation. But it was not the real cause. The real cause was right back again in selfishness. The large generality is the inability of people to forget themselves long enough to think honestly about others. So the marriage is broken up, and the parties both go away with bitterness because of the fact that it gradually built into a series of animosities. But behind these animosities were false basic concepts. And these basic concepts simply could not work. It seems to me that in every educational system that we have, there should be greater emphasis upon home planning and the various social responsibilities of individuals living under a democratic system of government. What we have to do in order to assure any permanence is that the individual is willing to give up certain attitudes of his own when he expects to share a life with someone else. Life is a sharing. It is not an endless battle for domination. It is not a constant defense against domination. This type of situation simply indicates that people not only are adolescent when they start out in a family relationship, but remain adolescent to the end. And I know not long ago there was trouble in one of our retirement communities where they have these little trailer homes. The neighbors all got together and petitioned to have a certain member of that colony asked to leave because they fought morning and night. All day long, there was nothing but screaming and shouting between these two people. And the joyful, wonderful part of it was they had been married nearly 50 years, and the situation had been that way from the beginning. Now, this type of thing is for something that we can do something about if we want to. Once it's become chronic, it is difficult to change it. But if it had been worked on intelligently at the beginning, they could have had a very happy life together. Sometimes we reach the point in which unhappiness seems to be necessary to us. We must have something so that we can have self-pity. And this is another factor. The many people enlarge and magnify disasters because it gives them a certain attitude or glamour of martyrdom. They are putting up with things, and this becomes a virtue, but it is foolish. All of this type of situation leads ultimately to neurotic negative patterns. So if we want to try to get over these mental blocks that seem to be especially frequent in confused social situations, we have to simply take upon ourselves the realization that life is an experience. Life is a series of incidents which we meet and control, or we meet and are defeated by these incidents. We are here to go through experiences. If we make mistakes, and we will, these mistakes constitute a common heritage. Everyone makes them. But some people, having made them, never get over them. Others, having made them, rise above them. One man whom I know is particularly an example of getting over a mistake is an ex-convict, a man who was really was in prison for years for grand theft. Coming out of prison, he has completely revised his life. He is now an honest and honored citizen, and he has never made any effort to conceal the fact that he was in prison. But he learned something. He could have been crushed, destroyed. He could have ended an alcoholic or on skid row, but he didn't. He realized his mistake and went to work to correct it. He educated himself, became very skilled, and is an individual who is now well-respected, with a good family, and with everything that came out of a prison sentence. because he was resolved to correct in himself the idea that it was possible to get something for nothing in this world. These kinds of experiences, therefore, help us to grow. But we may say, what about the people whom we have injured in these efforts to grow? The law of karma is very interesting. We injure someone, and what is their reaction to it? The only reaction to an injury that is constructive is to transmute it in ourselves. The only way that we can really end an injury or prevent ourselves from suffering from an injury is to have an insight great enough to understand the situation. The moment we begin to think in terms of forgiving the evils that are done to us, we are also growing. And the people we injure also have to face the experiences of living. They have injured someone along the way. We all have. So the injury that we give them is also very often the basis of the best growth they will ever receive. But they have to rise above the thing we did to them. And we have to rise above the things they did to us. It is to become capable of interpreting experience as growth rather than as tragedy. And we all have to learn to do it. We all have to realize that we have injured others, but that in many cases that injury has become the basis of growth for them, even as what they did to us has become the basis of a new philosophy of life for us. And in the grand scheme of things, the individual seeking internal light may be driven to the development of his own psychic and soul resources by the things that are done to him. Just as what we do hurt him, so he in turn, passing through the experience of hurt, rises above it and in turn forgives someone who has been in his mind with a grudge for a long time. The interrelations of life are chemical and alchemical. But the only solution to all of them is that hatred as a factor in life must simply cease. And it can only cease when we understand the integrities of nature. The universe, whether we like it or not, is just. It is not only just, but it is all-wise. And it is in all love that these things happen. We do not recognize this. We cannot see the glory and wonders of God in an earthquake or a tidal wave, nor can we find the inevitable experiences of life according to a divine plan on a battlefield. But actually, nothing dies. Nothing ceases. All things change. No one can destroy anyone else. The only thing they can really do is impede their own growth, limit themselves, and burden their lives with sad or despondent memories. The pattern for us is always the same. We are not the victims of what happens. We are the victims of what we do about it. We are not lost to forever because of disasters, physical or psychological. We do not end life here any more than we can hope to carry worldly ambitions into a better state. When we pass out of here, we are going to take with us unfinished business. And the most important of this unfinished business is perhaps our own mistakes. We will carry them with us until we solve them. The sooner we solve them, the sooner we will be free from them. Every mistake evaded will be cause of further trouble. Every mistake understood, honestly repented, with proper effort to make a constructive contribution in the place of the mistake we made, If we keep thinking in these terms, we will be too busy making better contributions to get so completely bound up in the past. The past is gone. The only thing it survives is experience. And the only value of experience is its redeeming power in personal conduct. Experience is the thing by which we grow. It is nature's way of teaching us all the good way of life and the proper approach to all situations. Experience means that in the end, we shall all end in a natural fraternity. All living things as members of one family, one humanity, one creation, must sometime come to an amicable relationship. They must become cooperative, they must become kindly, they must become friendly and unselfish. Until those times come, we will be in the same difficulties. And while we cannot guarantee that human society will make these discoveries in the immediate future, we know that as the result of personal disaster, sadness, sorrow, trouble in our own lives, that we can learn the reason for these difficulties and correct them through the renovation of conduct. These things we can do. We may not be able to change others, but we can change ourselves for the better every day. And in so doing, ensure the full destiny of ourselves. The recognition of our place in the universal plan is constantly recorded within our own spiritual entities. It is there. It is part of the growth of the soul. The soul sometimes grows in pain and suffering. The soul is sometimes a being of sorrow. But the soul is always learning, always loving, always teaching, always leading us into a fuller and more constructive relationship with life. If, therefore, we are able to release this, if we can release the good in ourselves, we can understand our own mistakes and find that they are blessings in disguise. Everything will work well if the individual does not descend into self-pity. Instead of being sorry for ourselves, we should rejoice at the opportunity that a mistake gives to do something better. A mistake is an opportunity that has been lost along the way, but it will come back. All mistakes come back. The only things that do not come back are solved problems. So the mistake that we made fits us or equips us to meet the next recurrence of a similar problem, so that the next time we do it better. And if every mistake results in a determination to do it better in the future, we will become so busy doing it better that we will not have much time left for regrets. Regrets will not help, but the lessons they teach us can prevent us from repeating the same mistake. And in the spirit of growth, in the spirit of integrity, in the spirit of trying to be better people, we pay our debts to nature. We've all incurred them, and we must all pay them. But when we become wiser, we pay them better. And instead of depending upon further outbursts of emotion to clear the atmosphere, we realize that a quiet determination not to make the same mistake again is probably the greatest and most important byproduct of misfortune. There is nothing to be gained by this problem of allowing ourselves to downgrade ourselves. We may not be proud of everything we do, we won't be. But there is no reason of going or wandering around, I'm no good, I'm no good, I'm worthless. Nothing is no good. Nothing is worthless. There is not a blade of grass that is worthless. Everything has its values. We should not downgrade ourselves. We should simply recognize that we have not given our worth an opportunity to express itself. We are not unable to grow. It's simply that we haven't taken advantage of the opportunities that are natural to our kind. There is no such a thing as a worthless creature or a worthless creation. Everything is worth because it is necessary. And the whole problem of life is to recognize discipline and accept it, recognize integrities and live them, recognize the rights of others and respect them, and recognize the rulership of the supreme power over all of the conduct of mortals and of all nature. We would not have problems if they were not necessary. We have minds, and because we have minds, we have to learn to use these minds. The proper use of the mind relieves us from practically all of the burdens of thinking. The misuse of the mind perpetuates these burdens indefinitely. Consequently, the mind must grow up. We must teach it. It sounds funny that the mind can teach itself, but it can. And it becomes particularly alive and vibrant and worthwhile when it is tied strongly to our aspirations, our convictions, our ideals, and we are allowing it to express the soul qualities locked within our own natures. Behind the worst sinner and inside of it, the worst sinner, is the potential of the greatest saint. For in each individual is deity, enthroned eternally. And if we allow this deity an opportunity, if we have a religion which encourages us to release the good, we can gradually rise above the temptations and pressures that lead to disaster. We have to recognize that the only way that free will or free mind power can function is that it gives us a right to make decisions. If this decision is wrong, if these faculties are allowed to be used negatively, if the mind and the thinking go to seed, this is not because they have to. It is because we do not use the abilities that we have to train the mind and the emotions to serve the principles that we know basically to be true. It is not that the mind is wrong. It is that the mind is an instrument. It is an instrument of consciousness. It is an instrument of soul power. It is an instrument of the inner divinity. If we tie it to our selfishness, it will wreck us. If we tie it to our ethics and our principles, it can become the most powerful constructive force we know. And to release the mind from the negatives, it must have positives. We must convert the mind to the fact that it was not created for worry and repentance. It was created for thought, for wisdom, for the gaining of skills, and the strengthening of integrities. If we get busy doing the things we ought to do, we will soon find that we can more than compensate in life for any mistakes that we have made. Mistakes are incidental. Correct action is basic and real and is proper to our natures. We all make some mistakes, but we do some things fairly well. And the more we do well, the fewer the mistakes. And the gradual disciplining of our personal living so that we can daily plan a constructive program will more than justify the fact that we had to learn this by suffering. We seem to be most open to constructive suggestion when we hurt somewhere. We are most appreciative of principles when we discover the tragedy of trying to live without them. And that in itself is the big lesson. And in the world in which we live and in the times in which we live, we are all in great need of this big lesson. The lesson that tells us that the proper use of the instruments that have been so magnificently bestowed upon us, the proper use of these instruments is rewarded with peace of mind, and psychic and spiritual growth. And the misuse, which is up to us, is the source of our pain and suffering. Therefore, if we get started immediately using these faculties, especially memory, wisely and lovingly, we will soon find that the old wounds will be healed, and we will find the tragedies of the past, the powers that move us to the fulfillment of a better destiny. Well, I guess that's it, folks.